percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Hey there.
It's that time.
Halloween, just around the corner. But you can listen to this anytime. Okay, the deal is, this time of year, a lot of people come up with all the scariest movies, scariest stories, scariest whatever, you name it. It's out there. And so I thought, well, just as a favor, I would flag a few. And so on the blog, Wendy's Coffee House Blogspot, I put 15 spooky stories, and these were flagged by Reddit at People Magazine, I think, put the note up on it. But there are other ghost stories in general on Reddit, and they're worth reading. Okay, just go through those. I always get some from Weston, the coffee house. When we do the show, and Verna Cowartz does the show, Ghost Tales of Weston, there's one night left open. It's Friday night. Saturday night's already booked. In the meantime, every year, there's always something that happens. This year, one of the things that happened was, as one of the groups was going up to a B&B, this fog comes out from the building over the group. And then a teenager who was staying there, his older people who were accompanying him, all gone down to visit some of the area facilities and the businesses, and he's by himself. He comes running out. He's all excited because he has heard voices and footsteps in the house. And again, like he's all alone. It's like, okay. So that was one of the highlights. One of the other things, now I've gone through the movies, and in the past, most recent movies, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children and the movie Get Out. They both have one thing in common. One thing in common. Now, they're a little spooky in different ways. This is the thing they have in common.
Run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run, run, run.
You cannot unhear this.
Run, rabbit, run, rabbit, run.
Okay, a classic, Flanagan and Allen.
Bang, bang, bang.
Oh man, yeah, that's the sad part. Okay, make that one go away, John. Okay, Okay, the rabbit is told to get away. You don't know what happens. But that, I was just shocked. What happened was, I went on to figure out, what the heck? Because this song is running over and over after I watched Miss Peregrine. I'm like, what the heck? And then there are other people saying, Run, Rabbit. Yes, this brought me here. Did you come here because of Miss Peregrine? The other ones, no, Get Out. I'm like, okay. So if you just do the previews on those are nice and frightening. One Step Beyond, if you have not seen this show.
The amazing drama you're about to see is a matter of human record. You may believe it or not. But the real people who lived this story, they believe it. They know. They took that one step beyond.
Fantastic show. Fantastic show. January 1959 to July 1961, you were the voice there, hosted by John Newland. He also directed every episode. And the difference between that and The Twilight Zone, this was supposed to be based on true events, docudramas. That's the way they produced it. And if you have not seen it, it's worth a binge watch. Okay, some of the guys on there: Jack Lord, Elizabeth Montgomery, a real who's who list of the old school actors and actresses: Warren Beatty, and Donald Pleasence, Suzanne Pleshette, just William Shatner. Okay, just that one's, they are fabulous. Now, along in that same vein, we have our guest today. Has experienced up close and personal. These are true stories he's included in his book. It's Fingerprints and Phantoms, True Tales of Law Enforcement Encounters and the Paranormal, with the Paranormal and the Strange. And Paul Rumash is my guest. Paul, did I say that name right first?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Common German name, right?
Well, okay. I'll have to get up to speed. That's okay.
No, you're great.
This is one of those things, though, that I think goes along with a season that people are finally getting more comfortable with talking about this and sharing the stories. Because I think you said you didn't set out to write a book of ghost stories. You just were a fan of campfire stories and started, you know, asking around the local coffee table, office gossip room, and said, you know, has anybody had these experiences? And wow, 26 of these are excellent.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, it is interesting. In law enforcement, I've been a crime scene investigator for 21 years now. And in law enforcement, we deal with death and horrible scenes of great emotion and all these things, and those would be very ripe for ghost stories, you'd think, but people don't like to talk about them because, you know, we're supposedly dealing with fact and law and evidence and things like that. But as you said, you know, I have an interest in it. And so as I started to ask people questions, at first, different law enforcement professionals weren't too forthcoming. But then when they saw that I was serious and wasn't going to make fun of them, then like the floodgates opened. And I mean, I have so many more stories. I could probably write 10 more books on this because people in law enforcement do encounter this stuff all the time.
Okay. You've been in law enforcement, you said, for 21 years. And let's get the background because that's what's important. As a forensic expert, I mean, that's what we would consider you at this point. How did that influence your take on these stories?
Well, it's an interesting question because I've told people about this book and, you know, done some other interviews and stuff. The question has always come up, well, how can you justify dealing with these kind of paranormal stories when you're a person who's supposed to deal in fact and logic and science and law and different things? And the way I describe it is, people are experiencing something, and you can take all the ghost stories or all the strange stories that you've heard, and you can exclude some of them, as you know, maybe this person has some mental problems and they're hallucinating. Like, you can exclude some of them in that way, and you can exclude some of them that it was a misidentification or people just talked themselves into saying they heard something or saw something. You can exclude some of them that way. But there are some stories that you simply can't exclude in that way. And as a person who's trained in the forensic sciences, I'm trained to follow where the evidence goes. I'm not supposed to have any preconceived notions. And it's the way I was taught to think when investigating a crime scene from my mentor. His name's Russ. And he always took the bottom-up approach, that he would go into a crime scene and he wouldn't have any theories to begin with. He would just start to look at the facts and accumulate data and look around. And, you know, everyone would be saying, oh, I think this happened, I think this happened. And Russ would be really quiet and just kind of take it all in. And then at the end, he would, after all the facts were accumulated, he would say what he thought had happened. And the dude was never wrong in the 10 years I worked with him. And so that's the way I was trained to think. You don't go into a situation with any preconceived notions. And so one of the stories that was kind of the launching point for my interest in this was, we had, when I was fairly new in the business, a pretty nasty homicide. I mean, all homicides are horrible, obviously. But this one was an estranged husband really cut up and stabbed his wife a lot, mm-hmm. and killed her. And it was a horrible scene. And while we were there, and I talk about this in the book, while we were there processing the scene, you could feel something. Like, whenever we walked into that apartment, we were there for, you know, almost every day for a few weeks processing the scene, and you could feel something going on in there. You could feel the deceased victim, like she was standing right there. And it got to the point where people would actually address her by name when they walked in, saying, hi, the name of the victim. And it got to the point where we got kind of used to this. Well, anyway, the scene was over, the case was solved, and the perpetrator went to prison, and you know, years had passed by. Well, and they had cleaned up the apartment and re-rented it out. And a young couple was living in the apartment, and they had to call the police for an unrelated matter. It was something like a noise complaint or a juvenile disturbance, just something minor that they needed to make a report for on the police. Well, the officer who showed up to the house had actually been part of that homicide investigation years before. And so for him, it was a little weird to go back to that apartment, but anyway, well, he was there doing his business and obviously didn't say anything. Well, at the end,
just a minute. Hang on. Well, we got to take a break. All right, so it's kind of a cliffhanger.
And, all right.
and this cliffhanger, when we come back, there's another one that I want to start with, too, and it has to do with who you're going to call, all right? Who you're going to call, that's chapter three. And it's a little twist. All right, so we're talking with Paul Rimash, and he's the author of, this is a wonderful book of stories from law enforcement officials in some way, shape, or form, Fingerprints and Phantoms, True Tales of Law Enforcement Encounters with the Paranormal and the Strange. Next on Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. With my guest, the author of Fingerprints and Phantoms, True Tales of Law Enforcement Encounters with the Paranormal and the Strange. Stories, real events. Now, we were in the middle of one where there'd been a heinous crime. I mean, really graphic. And as time has passed, the officer who was involved with this goes back to the scene, and it's an apartment, so it's somebody else is there. And that's where we pick up the story. You remember, Paul?
Yeah, and so the officer, his name was Mike, or is Mike, and he was dealing with these people on a minor incident that they weren't even really involved in. It was a noise complaint or a juvenile disturbance, something of that nature. And when they got done, the lady said, was somebody killed in these apartments? Just kind of out of the blue. And it took Mike aback a little bit, and he said, you know, he felt, you know, the hair on the back of his neck rise up a little bit because, you know, he re-experienced it mentally. And he said, well, yes. And she said, well, which unit? And at this point, Mike says, well, are you sure you want to know? And she said, well, yes. And he said, well, this one. And, you know, he didn't know what to expect necessarily, but you know, whether they would panic or seem upset or whatever, but all the response that he really got from that was the husband said, well, that explains a few things, and then he went back to watching TV. And so Mike was like, well, you know, he couldn't let this drop because he was like, well, why did you ask, you know? So he said, well, you know, why did you want to know or what's going on? And the family, the couple living there said, well, you know, there's just some strange things that happen in this apartment, like the bathroom light will turn on by itself and the door will open. And, you know, they didn't seem too concerned about it. But what was really interesting about this and where it goes back to what I was talking about before the break to, you know, not being able to dismiss something, the thing that those people described, like they didn't know any details about the crime. They didn't know where it happened in the apartment. They didn't really know anything about it. What they were describing happened to them, the bathroom light flicking on and the bathroom door opening. Mm-hmm. This was right where the woman had been killed. And it was a bathroom door that opened outward. And so we figure she was running down the hall trying to get away, trying to get in the bathroom, but she got sandwiched against the door. And had the door opened inward, or had she been able to get into the bathroom, she might have been able to survive. And so these people were describing essentially an important detail of this crime. How would they have known that?
Yeah.
And so I can't dismiss it. Like, sure, you know, houses can be drafty and doors can open and there can be electrical problems. We could try to find a rational explanation for this, but the intimate detail that it provided, I can't just instantly dismiss it.
And I like that too, because they're not really frightened by it. They're just curious. Okay, so what's the deal? So obviously they have a sensation of it. They know what's going on. And that's just like, well, that's part of it.
Yeah.
I have a question.
So it was and that was one of the earlier stories. And to me, it just, like I said, you can't instantly dismiss it. Like, who knows what's going on? And I mean, in reality, I'm kind of a skeptic. I'm a healthy skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't just believe every story that somebody tells me. But when there's details like that, you can't, like I said, you can't just instantly dismiss it. That is not in line with my training, where there's evidence that you don't like and you just dismiss. I can't do that. You have to follow the evidence.
What I liked was the fact that the officer who was on that call had also been there before, and that's more than chance to me. So it was a way for him to also get a bit of feedback saying, hey, guess what?
And he maybe needed it. I mean, it was a traumatic call for everybody involved. For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. You can't overlook that. You can't deny it. He was there. So how he processes that is up to him. I like there was one story in there in particular. We're not going to go into it. But the guy was he obviously described seeing an apparition or some kind of a ghost, some type of phenomenon. And you ask him what he thought about that. And he said, you know, did it bother him? And he said, well, I don't believe in ghosts. No, it didn't bother me.
Yeah.
It's like, I saw it. I don't believe it. No biggie.
Yeah, he wasn't that bothered.
Nope, it's just part of the job. Okay, have some more coffee. Good to go. Now, there's one in here that I thought was really interesting. Who are you going to call? It's a different take on some of the calls you guys have to make. And could you get in? We've got about 6 minutes, so maybe just the overview of how this one went down.
Yeah, and this was I tried to put a lot of humor in the book. Like it deals with serious topics, but I tried to make it fun and enjoyable read. And so I added some stories that I thought were kind of funny. And this was one of them where there was a lady in this particular city that she had mental problems and she struggled with mental illness, and she was always calling the officers for things that just weren't true. And just there, if you talk to the officers who dealt with this gal, I mean, there was just a laundry list of things that they dealt with that just weren't happening. But anyway, one stretch, she kept calling 911 and saying that there were ghosts in her house. And so the officers would come and they would check everything out and everything seemed okay. But then she would keep calling them. So one day the officers got a little tired of this. And, you know, they wanted to help her, and they were, you know, they were doing this with respect, but they decided to try a little bit of a different approach. So when she called them for ghosts in her house, they grabbed their radar guns, and their guns that are kind of big and have flashing lights on them, and the officers use them to track how fast people are driving so they can give out tickets. So they grabbed their radar guns and went into the house and said, ma'am, we have some new equipment that's going to get rid of your ghosts. And so they walked around her house with these guns, and when you pull the trigger, it beeps and flashes and does different things. So they walked around the house with these radar guns, pointing them and beeping them and doing all these things. And then after a minute, they said, okay, ma'am, that should take care of your ghost problem. Have a nice day. And so they left. And she never called them back.
So apparently it worked.
It either worked, or maybe she was thinking, boy, these guys are nuts. I don't want them in my house anymore.
They're completely useless.
Right. So who knows what happened, but that was using a little bit of humor in a way to handle kind of an unwinnable situation for them. So
okay.
I love that story.
Yeah, and that's what I thought. Okay, it adds a bit of levity, but it also gives you a different way of solving a problem that is completely unexpected. Like, whoever came up with that idea was brilliant. It's like, okay. You're right. Some of this stuff is hard because you're talking about, you know, there are dead bodies, there are gruesome situations, there are, you know, things that make you uncomfortable. And you tried to make this a little bit more anonymous, where you're not citing the complete, total identifying details to respect the family. So just for people who are listening, there's some of this that is, the stories are real, but some of the details are meant to be a little more well hidden. Okay, so just to clarify.
Right, and this isn't supposed to be a book of true crime. So I do, whenever possible, keep the details vague. And unfortunately, scenarios like wives being killed by their husbands and different things, they unfortunately repeat themselves over and over again. So, yeah, I have ultimate respect for the victims and their families, and, yeah, I kept these details very vague. And some people have been like, hey, I'd like more details of the crime in your book, and I'm like, well, that's not really this book.
Yeah, no, no.
This isn't true crime.
No, no. And my guest, Paul Rimash, and you can find this on YouTube, anywhere. Do you guys have a website?
I like to deal with as many people as I can with my Facebook page. So I would love to hear feedback from your listeners on my Facebook page. It's Fingerprints and Phantoms. And then Schiffer Publishing has a website with lots more information about the book.
Okay. What is Coffee House? KCMO Talk Radio. You know, we talk about ghosts a lot during October or the Halloween season, but it isn't just a one season, one month, one time of year thing. It's 24/7, especially if you live in a town known for all sorts of hauntings like Westwood. And maybe it's, I said Westwood. That was a Freudian slip. Weston, Missouri. The deal is that I wanted to get somebody with a different perspective. And my guest, Paul Rimash, is actually a law enforcement professional and also a crime scene investigator for now 21 years. And with his perspective, he's talked to other folks in the field to get their stories. So these are up close and personal, real stories. They've been disguised just a little bit to protect some of the identities and keep the privacy intact. But that's why I wanted to, you know, come at it from this angle, is it isn't just, you know, goofy people who report this. It's a part of our life. And it's nice to hear that this is something that people are addressing more and that officers are saying, okay, look, this is what happened. So this story with Paul, we get into one that I don't know who the quote was from, but if it isn't written down, it didn't happen. Can you bring that? I thought that was a really a good approach.
Yeah, and that my former lieutenant of mine, Doug Coleman, he used to always say that. If it's not written down, it didn't happen. And that's actually, you know, I don't think he coined the phrase. It's been around in law enforcement a long time. And it tells you, I mean, you have to write down the things that you experience in, you know, your job for your reports and court and different things. You know, you have to be a good documenter. And so that phrase has been with me in my career for, you know, in professional aspects, but it also kind of applies to one of the very interesting stories from my book. And because if you don't have the evidence of it, then it didn't happen. And this was a case where one of my former coworkers, she went on to a different agency. Now she works for a local agency, but when she was in college, some of her friends wanted to do a little bit of ghost hunting. And so they went down to this pond nearby them that was known to be haunted. And unfortunately, a young man had drowned previously in the water, and so lots of the ghost stories seem to revolve around him. So they go down, and they want to try to capture an EVP, an electronic voice phenomenon. So they have their video camera, and they're going around and recording and laughing and talking and having a good time. Well, they don't think they really experience anything when they're there at the little pond. And so, you know, they're a little bit disappointed that nothing happened. And so they go back to their apartment and they're, you know, laughing and having a good time and listening to the video and watching the video that they took. Well, at one point, someone goes, "Stop, rewind. Did you hear that?" And so they're all quiet and they rewind the tape a little bit and they play it. And they very distinctively hear on the tape, on the videotape, a little boy's voice say, "Hello?" And at this point, they all freak out because they didn't hear that. And when they were there, you know, no one saw anything. They replayed it multiple times, and each time, just clear as day, they hear, "Hello?" And so, you know, they are freaked out and laugh and have a good time with this, but then they kind of move on from it. Well, not everybody moved on from it, though, however. So the guy who's video recorder it was started to experience really weird things going on to him. So one night a big stack of papers on the end of his on a dresser by his bed just exploded all over the room. There was no fan or no wind or no furnace going. It just, the papers blew all over and just other weird stuff started to happen. But the weirdest thing for him was he started to get scratches on his back that he could not account for. They should not have been there. And so as these experiences became more and more alarming to him, he thought of this tape. He thought of what was on the tape, and perhaps something had followed them home. Mm-hmm. And so he actually deleted the tape, and as soon as he deleted the video of the EVP, then the weird things stopped happening to him. And so it was very disturbing for everybody involved, especially when there was a physical manifestation of the scratches. But it goes to, you know, that concept that my lieutenant taught me, it's not written down, it didn't happen. You know, they know they had evidence, but they had to delete it, and so I guess it didn't happen. But
that's saying there's something, an attachment or something, and you talk about haunted evidence rooms where a lot of the activity, there's a lot of stuff that happens. So it's kind of like that's a piece of evidence, and so you just got rid of the evidence, and the attachment said, oh, see ya, bye.
Right, and that, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, the book is a collection of stories, and they're supposed to be fun, and they're supposed to be spooky, and, you know, perfect for writing, for sitting around a campfire, you know, kind of, that's how I wrote it, and the tone that I wrote it in. But there were different patterns that did seem to pop up as I, you know, assembled these stories. And one of those is like you said, there, a lot of people have weird stuff associated with evidence and their evidence rooms. And there does seem to be some sort of attachment that spirits or whatever energy has to their property. And so we'll have a bad case, a homicide, and we'll bring evidence back, and some weird stuff will start to happen around our lab. And then as soon as that evidence gets taken away from our lab, then the weird stuff stops. And so, you know, I don't know what's going on. I don't draw any conclusions necessarily in the book, but that does seem to be a pattern that people, spirits or whatever, are attached or linked to their possessions.
Well, and there's also there was a story in there about not the officer involved, but the spouse who saw something that did involve the officer. And again, that's an attachment to the scene, but it the way it manifested was completely, here's the spouse, and you would think they would be immune from this stuff, but they aren't. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, and so I think, like, the story number one for this book, like the thing that really kicked it off, was it appeared that a ghost followed one of my friends, a fellow CSI, home from a crime scene. And it opens up a lot of disturbing possibilities for all of us that, you know, we bring home the trauma from these things. We bring home maybe contamination on our clothing, but are these spirits following us home as well? And the story you're referring to was one of my coworkers now, a young CSI. She worked this very disturbing case where a girl about her same age was murdered. And so there was this connection there, kind of mentally, that you know, you can relate to someone who's similar in age and different things. And so this case really was engrossing for her, and she did a really good job on it. Well, one night she was sleeping, and her husband was sleeping as well, but he started to act really restless, and he was tossing around in the bed. And all of a sudden, he screams out the name of this victim of this homicide that my coworker had worked. And, you know, normally a wife might be disturbed if her husband screamed out a name of another woman in the middle of the night, but this was a different kind of
disturbing.
This was a different, you know, this wasn't his ex-girlfriend's name he was screaming out.
Okay, hold on. We're going to take a break right there. This is obviously a cliffhanger. And that's what's so fascinating about these. There's so much more to the story. You're going to have to get the book because we can't go into details on all of these. So stick around. Coming up with the rest of the story on Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Spooky, sometimes weird, other times heart-stopping, other times. These stories are real. So if you're interested in all things ghosty and all things unexplained, Fingerprints and Phantoms, True Tales of Law Enforcement Encounters with the Paranormal and the Strange, talking with author and law enforcement official, forensic expert, we'll go with that, Paul Rimash. And actually, he has a job to do, so we can't keep him too long, but glad he took a break.
I'm glad to do it.
Yay. So this is one of those things where this seems like, I mean, if you're just getting up to speed here with the break, the officer has come home. Her husband is distressed. He's asleep, sound asleep, doesn't know what she's been doing, but he's calling out the name, screaming out the name of another woman who happens to be that's the name of the victim. And so here's this weird thing happening, and that's where we pick it up.
Okay, so yeah, the husband is restless in his sleep, screams out the name of this murder victim that his wife had been working the case. And so she, you know, she's at this point alarmed, like, what is going on? And so she wakes him up, and she's like, what's going on? And he's like, oh, I was just dreaming, I guess. And I was just laying there, and I could see this person, this murder victim, coming into our room and coming towards the bed, and she was getting closer and closer to you like she was trying to get you. And so I screamed her name, and then I woke up, and she left. And at this point, my coworkers extremely alarmed because, you know, this was it just a dream? I don't know, but here the spirit possibly of this murder victim had come into her home, followed her home, and was trying to get her. And what that meant exactly, we don't know. Like, was she trying to hurt her or trying to get her attention or whatever? We don't know. But the husband saw it, and in his dream or in his sleep state or whatever, astral form, however you want to put it, he saw something. And so, yeah, it's there seems to be, once again, one of these patterns where sometimes spirits, energy, however you want to categorize it, will seem to follow crime scene investigators and officers home.
And see, to me, I mean, it makes perfect sense, at least with my experience. It would have much more to do with that person thinking that maybe there would be a way to get a message or information or connection, and maybe that this officer has some kind of, you know, intuition or sense, and they could connect. I dealt with a suicide victim, and that his way of getting my attention was really disconcerting and uncomfortable for me. But that was the whole point, was to try and get me to help him move on. And finding that out afterwards was like, okay, that's a relief. But it was at the time, like, what the heck? You cover a lot of different types of experiences, and one that's really fascinating has to do with dogs. And we don't have a lot of time, but this is something that's ongoing, and it raises a lot of questions. What is it about?
Well, so most of the stories in my book are local here to northern Utah, specifically Ogden, the Ogden area. And Ogden's a really haunted town. You said you live in a haunted town. I think, as far as Utah goes, Ogden's one of the most haunted towns. So it's kind of understandable that we have weird stuff up here. But the story that I'm going to relate came from Los Angeles. And so one of the officers who works here in Ogden now used to work for LAPD. That's where he started out his career. And when I was gathering stories for the book, I asked him if he had any, you know, ghostly stories. And he said, well, I don't have any ghostly stories, but I have something really weird. And so what happened, and I've heard this from him, I trust him, I haven't heard it from any other officers who've been in LAPD, so maybe we could get verification. But what he said happened is all the time, it happened so often that they came to just accept it. They would be driving along, and they would see a suspect, a gang member that they were looking for, and they would start to chase him. And they would, you know, be in a foot pursuit with him. This guy was just a little bit ahead of him. He would go around a corner into, like, a dead-end alley. And they thought, all right, we got him. There's no way out of this alley. They were just seconds. And I'm talking not, you know, 10 or 20 seconds, but 1 or 2 or 3 seconds. Behind this guy, they would go around the corner, and there would be nobody in the alley. No human being was in the alley. But there was a dog sitting right close to where the person should have been. And the dog would even kind of look like the person. And the dog would be looking up at them, not really alarmed, not really surprised that these cops just ran around the corner. The dog would just be looking up at them. And sometimes there would be an article of clothing or a cell phone or some human implement by the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened multiple times to the officers in this section of inner city LA.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no logical way that the perpetrator or the suspect or whatever should have been able to get away. It was a dead end alley, or they were right on his heels or whatever. And so they began to bemuse amongst themselves that the guy had turned into a dog. And so it even got to the point where they would be in a foot pursuit, everybody would be listening, and then you would hear, well, cancel the foot pursuit, he turned into a dog. And so they would say that over the air. And I really don't know how to wrap my mind around this story. Like he wasn't telling me, oh, these guys absolutely turned into a dog.
Right.
But he was just saying, he was relating this experience that people had over and over and over again. And yeah, like I said, the dog sometimes would look like a person. Sometimes there would be a sock or something by the dog. And often the dog looked kind of like the person. If the person was skinny that they were chasing, the dog would be kind of skinny and mangy. If the person was bigger, the dog would be bigger. And so there was just enough. And okay, maybe we can say, well, that's just them excusing that they, you know, lost their suspect in the foot pursuit. I don't know. I don't really know what to make of the story.
I think the only way they could have found anything more is if somebody adopted the dog. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it looks like we've got one for adoption. Let's see how this goes.
But I mean, you there are stories of changelings,
yeah,
and skinwalkers, and I mean there's stories in myth and folklore and different things where people have been able to turn into animals. So I don't know. Like, once again, I'm not drawing any conclusions on this. I'm just relating the story as told, but
a pattern.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
It is a bizarre
pattern.
Story.
Yeah, that, okay, so there you go. I think we've piqued people's interest. There are some good stories in here, and good stories make you think, they make you question, and they keep you curious. I think you've done a phenomenal job, and I do hope you'll come up with some more stories, since you said you had more book fodder, basically, you know, on the back burner that you could do something with. I hope that wasn't just a tease.
No, I it's funny that this stuff kind of snowballs. Like when you people see that you have a book on this and that you're serious,
mm-hmm,
lots of people have stories.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And we love stories. So get the marshmallows and the campfire ready. Well, you don't have to do that. That's a good thing about this. You can, you know, with this, you'll probably get some more people saying, here, have you heard about this? So Facebook, that's how people connect with you.
Yep. That's the easiest way right now. Like you said, I'm super busy right now. So if you reach out to me on Fingerprints and Phantoms Facebook page, send me a message. I try to respond to everybody who reaches out. And yeah, if you have stories, I would love to hear them. I love to interact through that media as best I can.
Excellent. Paul Ramosh. Okay, so again, this means he is not retired. He's still working, which means he could still collect some more stories from the scene and all of that. And the school he went to was haunted. We didn't have time for all this stuff because, as you can tell, each story has its own personal element and can, you know, continue for probably a couple of more hours on all these stories. So thank you for listening. In the meantime, if you have a story you want to share, you can connect with him as well. And I put some, again, on the Blogspot, Wendy's Coffeehouse Blogspot, put a few links out there. There's just so much happening, and sometimes we discount things that it would take a little bit more in investigating, exploring, to maybe follow a few more threads to find out whether it's legit or not. We don't know all the answers. And that's the best part. Thanks for listening.